Hi, welcome to Adventures in Awakening. I'm your host, Amber. Thank you so much for tuning in today. If this is your first time here, this is a podcast, a place just to discuss it all, a place where anything goes and no topic is off limits. I created this podcast just to assist and guide each other and help others in their journey of awakening and growing. It is my belief we come here to Earth to learn, to grow, to evolve spiritually, and the world needs us to learn and grow and evolve right now to raise our vibration and step into the full potential of who we are. So thank you so much for tuning in. If you like this podcast, please share, rate, follow, help support, grow the community. If you would like a private Reiki session with myself, a Reiki attunement, I'm offering astrology readings. The website will be under construction, so it is not on there. If you would like a personalized astrology reading, just to see if you have questions about what's going on in the world, how eclipse season could, you know, affect you, or the remainder of the year, what's going to show up for you, head over to my website, adventuresinawakening.com. Send me an email and we can discuss getting a private reading going for you. Today, I had the pleasure of interviewing Offset, and the universe guided to me to Offset. It was pretty awesome how it happened. I was in deep meditation and Hathor came through a meditation. And I was like, what is a Hathor? Who's a Hathor? And so I started Googling and researching and kind of going down this deep, just dive into the history of Egypt. And I was the meditation was so powerful. Like the attunements that happened, the frequency of like raising my heart vibration. It was just one of the most magical things I've ever experienced. So along the way, I discovered Offset, reached out. Take a listen to the episode and you'll find out some of the similarities and how, you know, we were guided to each other, how we were drawn to Egypt. It's pretty magical. So take a listen, tune in, and thank you so much for being here today. Sending you so much love. Namaste. Well, welcome to Adventures in Awakening. I'm so excited to have you here today. I would first like you to share a little bit about yourself with the audience.
Okay. Well, hi, Amber. I'm happy to be here too. thank you so much for inviting me to be here with everyone. I'm Offset, and I'm a priestess of Isis and a harpist and a photographer and a tour guide to ancient Egypt. I teach online classes about the Egyptian mysteries. And I love being outside in nature, and dogs and horses are my favorites.
Ooh, would you say dogs and horses are your spirit animal or one of them?
Definitely a horse would be, yes. I've loved them ever since I can remember, and I've always had horses. So it's just something that's very important to me to have in my life.
Yes, I agree. So tell me how you landed exactly where you are today, a little bit about your awakening story.
So one of the things that happened to me, so I'm going to go way back to when I was growing up as a kid. I was very religious, and growing up in the church, you know, you read your Bible, you have your devotions, you go to Sunday school, you do all of these things. And then as I started to get a little older as a teenager, mid-teens, late teens, I started to feel like something there was just not, it just wasn't sitting right with me. Because one of the things that we were expected to do was on Saturday mornings, we would go out and what we would call witness to people in the neighborhood. So it was basically, you know, door to door, knock on people's doors, you hand them a pamphlet, you invite them to come to your church service. And I noticed that, you know, we were going to the front doors of people's homes, that we were uninvited. And then when they would tell us that we were, you know, we're going to church over at the Catholic church up the street, or we're happy going to the Methodist church, that, you know, the adult that I was with would tell them basically that, you know, well, that's not how you get to heaven and this and that. And I just felt like we were doing something really rude, basically, you know, going to someone's home uninvited and basically telling them that they were wrong. And so it just wasn't sitting right with me. And ever since I was 11 years old, I started playing piano for church. So I was the accompanist, and there was a organist that I would play with as well. And I would get the music from the choir director and be able to practice ahead of time and that sort of thing. And about the time I was 18, 19 years old, I just kind of wanted to go to church. I didn't want to sit at the piano and play for everything that was going on. And one of the things that happened when I told the choir director and my parents that I just wanted to come, I wanted to sit in the pew, I wanted to stand and sing, I wanted to sit and pray, I wanted to do all these things. And I was made to feel very guilty about that decision, that I was not using God's gifts. And to me, I felt like, well, why are you not happy that I'm just here in the pew and coming to church? So after I left home, and you know, that's what all kids do. They grow up and they leave home. I, you know, got married and we were going to church, and I just didn't want to go to church anymore. I was searching for what the right answer was. And so for a long time, you know, then that marriage fizzled because he was very religious and, you know, didn't understand what was happening. And so for many years then I was not doing anything. I wasn't going to church anywhere. I wasn't seeking out anything to try to fill that void. And then one day I learned about some meditation classes, and you know, I was watching John Edward on TV. His show Crossing Over was on, and I was so fascinated by all of that. And so I started going to meditation classes. And one night we were channeling or learning to channel, and the instructor, you know, she had the light off and she had the music playing, and we were supposed to envision ourselves going across this bridge and meeting a being that was going to share amazing words of wisdom with the whole entire room. And I just knew that it was going to be Archangel Uriel, because I was at the time reading all of Doreen Virtue's books about the angels, and he was one that I was particularly drawn to. And so the being came in my meditation, and when I asked for the name, I heard, "I am Hathor." And I had never heard of Hathor. I didn't know what a Hathor was. And so I just said, "No, I don't know you. You know, go away. I'm waiting for Archangel Uriel." And I did this like three more times. And each time, you know, the being came and said, "I am Hathor." And so finally I was like, "Okay, fine. You know, you're Hathor." And in that moment, I don't know how else to describe it, but there was a being that entered me, and my heart was pounding. I could not catch my breath. My crown chakra was, I just felt like I was vibrating all over. My crown chakra was huge, and I didn't obviously speak any words of great wisdom to the class because I was just overwhelmed by this presence. And we came out of the meditation and the lights came on, and I said, "What is a Hathor?" And I began, you know, my teacher was very much into extraterrestrials, and so she got in sound healing, and so she got me, you know, kind of on the Tom Kenyon and the Hathor's path. And then I started reading his book about Mary Magdalene and all of this sort of thing. And there were a lot of like Egyptian connections there. And then I had a girlfriend who was doing a Priestess of Isis program. And she said, "Hey, I think you would really like this and you should check it out." So I did, and I signed up. And then that kind of began a long journey for me of learning about ancient Egypt, really opening up to the wisdom of the various Netaru. And so everything just started to really open up. I mean, before then I was playing with tarot cards and oracle cards, and you know, I felt like my intuition was opening up and I was doing readings and that type of thing, but I don't feel like it was until I started really working with the Egyptian mysteries that everything just, I could not even explain some of the magical things that happened or synchronistic events that they're all inexplainable. Mm-hmm. So
would you say meditation is what first got you into more the spiritual side of things, like spirituality versus religion? Was it listening to your own inner voice or what you were experiencing through meditation?
Meditation is something that, while I don't like to recommend it because everybody's like, oh, meditation, I have to recommend it, because if you don't set aside time to sit still mm-hmm. and to listen to your inner voice and to get out of your way, you won't be able to receive any guidance or insight as well as you can. Mm-hmm. And it's also interesting, you know, within the Egyptian mysteries, you know, I use the term Neter to describe the gods and goddesses. So their ancient Egyptians had a word for the gods and goddesses, which is NTR, because they didn't use vowels. So Neter, which became our word for nature. Mm. And so there's this element of divinity within everything. The air is a god. The water is a god. The sun is a god. And so when you are outside in nature, among all of this divine life that's outside of you, you're breathing it in. Your skin is absorbing the rays of the sun and using all of that to create vitamins that you need in your life mm-hmm. for well-being. When you breathe, that's life itself. So, you know, and even growing up in church, we're taught that our bodies are the temple of God. Well, I think within the ancient Egyptian beliefs, it goes a little deeper than that. And it's not an egotistic way of looking at it, but it's more of a way of, I am aligned with deity itself, and mm-hmm. I am a divine being as well.
That's good. If we all just said, I am a divine being and felt it, right? Oh,
yes.
What a different world it would be. So going back to like the first time you're really open to accepting Hathor and hearing the wisdom that came through, do you remember what was shared with you?
She didn't share anything. Like, I can't remember all that I felt. I'll say it this way. All that I experienced was a feeling of her presence. There, you know, I was searching for a word. I was searching for her to say something. But I think it was just kind of like, all right, child, you said to go away, and I persisted, and here I am. And so I just want to introduce myself. I am Hathor. Yes.
And can you explain for the audience who Hathor is?
Oh, Hathor.
I'll try.
I've taught a lot of workshops and classes on her because I just love her so much. She's multifaceted. She's a goddess that we normally will see as a woman body with a cow face. Sometimes she'll have a more of a woman's face or a human face, but she'll have this wig on and cow ears. And sometimes people will say that, you know, this vision of the countenance or the face of Hathor is representing the female reproductive system. And Hathor is very much a mother goddess and a fertility goddess and a goddess of magic and love and aromatherapy and sexuality. And she's also a goddess who has funerary aspects. So she was a like the Lady of the West, where, you know, all of the souls go. She's one of the sky goddesses, where we all come from the stars and then we all return. So she's a very important goddess in ancient Egypt.
I love it. I know that we had a similar experience that we talked about, which is kind of how I found you along the way of Hathor coming to me and me not ever hearing the name and Googling it and then going down the rabbit hole of just learning more about ancient Egypt. And I'm so drawn to that right now. And then I stumbled across your name and here we are. It's just like divinely guided and I love it so much. So
I know when you shared your story with me, I just kind of was sitting here with my mouth open. And again, I mean, these are the kinds of things, the magic that happens, you know, to hear someone else have this story of, I hear the name Hathor and I don't know what it is. And I mean, to me, that's hugely significant as a pivotal point in your spiritual practice and understanding. And so for you, I'm just so excited to see what all Hathor and the Netheru are just going to begin to open up for you and all of the deeper layers of not just understanding spirituality, but understanding yourself. You know, Hathor, she's very much a goddess of fate. There were the seven Hathors who were goddesses of fate and they attended the birth. And, you know, so they have all these different names of, you know, she who flourishes and she whose name is, she whose name flourishes and she whose hair is bright and she with the red hair. And I feel like all of these different aspects of Hathor defines these parts of ourselves, like our what our appearance is, what our challenges are, the numerology of our name and how that affects us. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when you have a goddess such as Hathor appearing to you, and, you know, I just feel like she has so much in store for you to teach you and open up.
Yes.
So the magic.
I'm so excited. I am excited. And the feeling of just divine love, mm-hmm. You can't put it into words, right? Mm-hmm. Like it was so much and so strong. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited you're here and I'm excited to share what you have to offer. And I would love for you to share just a little bit more on Hathor and where, you know, you started to channel and receive messages, where that took you.
Yes. So as I said, I just started learning more about ancient Egypt through it's actually a Priestess of Isis program. So then my shift became not so much Hathor, but then Isis and learning about her history and her role throughout ancient Egypt and then how she spread through Rome and Greece and even up into France and the UK and all of those places, you know, just she's a worldwide goddess. And so I believe that, you know, Hathor really is the one who called me and found me. And I always like to tell people, she is like, she picked me out and she says, "You're mine. You know, you're mine. You're my flesh and blood. Mm-hmm. You know, you are my child." And, you know, this is something that even the pharaohs, you know, would align themselves, like Queen Hatshepsut. She was one of the most, the longest ruling, female pharaoh in ancient Egypt, I believe. And she aligned herself also with the goddess Hathor. So, you know, the ancients would align themselves with the gods and goddesses as if they were their children, which mm-hmm. gave them then that divinity of power. And so then it made sense that they were the rulers over ancient Egypt, since they were the daughter or the child of the god or goddess. And so that's something that I think that, you know, even growing up religious, then what are we called? We're the children of God. Mm-hmm. And so for me, what's really started to open up was so much of these similar paths within, or the similar threads within the various religions around the world. You know, you have cow goddesses in many cultures. You have the sky goddess in many cultures. You have the stories of the flood in many cultures. And so once again, it just really began to open up things for me. And I'll back up again to, you know, leaving the church and, you know, that sort of thing when I was in my early 20s, late teens. And I was going to college at the time, and I had to take, you know, each, I don't know why, even in liberal arts, you have to take a religion class. And the first day of class, I went in and my mind was blown, because he said, well, what if, you know, the Bible isn't written by God or not inspired by God and all of this. And I was just like, that's blasphemy. And I went home and I told my dad, and I was like, I don't think I could take this class. And he's like, no, my child, you're right. So I was able to drop out of that class. But then I changed schools, and, you know, to get my degree, I had to take a religion class. And that religion teacher, I enjoyed so much. I learned about all the different religions and Greek stories of mythology, and it was fascinating to me. And so, you know, then when we learn about both Isis and Hathor and how they have all of these various facets of themselves, you know, we tend to like things to be in a little box. Okay, so she is a goddess of fertility, but she's a goddess of death in the afterlife. Like, I don't understand, you know, it's either baking soda or baking powder. It can't be both, right? But if you put those things into an ingredients of all the other things, then you have a cookie or a cake. So there's these aspects of her that are so, they seem varied, but if you think even about ourselves, you know, we are mothers, we are daughters, we are aunts, we are teachers, we are yoga instructors, we, you know, help out at the animal shelter, we're gardeners, we are chefs, we do all of these things. And I think that's one of the things that working with the Netaru, learning about the various aspects of Isis and Hathor, and knowing that they had so many different things that they focused on, it helps to kind of settle you into a place of, oh, okay, great. I don't have to be just one thing in the world. If I have three different interests that I really, really like, but they're very different, it doesn't matter. I don't have to focus on just one, you know, and do just that. So I think it's been very helpful and supportive to learn about the different gods and goddesses and all of their various aspects. So
when did like the teaching start to come through to you? Were you doing research on your own, or were you getting like, were they, you know, sharing information and like mysteries of Egypt with you?
So it's a little bit of both. So a lot of it came through reading books and learning more about her and studying. But also some insights and things, I would say dots were connected when I would spend time in meditating with the goddesses, or when I was doing a ritual or a ceremony and, you know, really started paying attention to what I was doing, why I was doing it, and really getting some insight during those moments of stillness. And it's interesting because even when I read, I'll notice things. It's almost as like if you slow down your reading, that itself can become a meditation, and you'll catch phrases or words or something that's going on within what you're reading, and it'll click. Oh, that's why this is happening. So I think that the insights, they all kind of come through the reading, through the ritual, and through the meditation.
Okay, I love that. And then how did you start to develop your programs and the services that you offer? I mean, you were Were you being just led to create this and share it, or?
Yeah, so I had so much magic that happened for me on my own Priestess of Isis path that, and I've always wanted to be a teacher. So, I mean, even growing up, I thought I was going to be, you know, an elementary school teacher or something like that. And I just had this hunger for learning. Mm-hmm. And when you have so much knowledge inside your head that's organized, you kind of feel like you're going to explode if it doesn't come out. Mm-hmm. So, and learning, if you teach a class, then you're going to really dive deep into it because you're going to be presenting things and you're going to be learning. So not only do I get to teach other people and let them have the joy of learning, I get to have the joy of learning on the back end as I'm putting everything together. And it's such a fun process for me. So, and I think that also, you know, through doing readings for people, you know, it wasn't just the insight, like the psychic insight that I would give them or the messages from their loved ones that I would give them that would be helpful. Sometimes the sessions they would feel more like life coaching sessions. And then people, you know, they would say, gosh, you're really, you know, good at, you know, explaining something or things like that. And so I thought, okay, you know, if people are understanding what I'm saying and it's helpful for them, then I need to be putting things out there that continue to be helpful and that lead people along so that they can, because I know when I was learning, you know, I was always searching for somebody to understand what I was experiencing. Yes. So I wanted to create kind of a container for that.
I love that. And just you following your inner voice and your own inner wisdom and your joy and your passion has led you to creating this beautiful thing to share with others, which is amazing. It's just, you know, kind of confirmation that when you listen to the whispers of your soul, your spirit, and look outside of the box, mm-hmm. follow your heart, amazing things happen.
Right. And I started noticing the different kinds of people that were finding me. And, you know, for a long time, I only had my Priestess of Isis program, you know, as something that you could enroll in and be in constantly. And here and there, I would do some online classes. And, but then I realized that not everyone wants to be a Priestess of Isis, but there are people that want to learn about ancient Egypt and mm-hmm. to develop their practice through those mysteries. And so that's when I created the Egyptian Mystery School on Patreon so that it could be just that. Mm-hmm. And people didn't have to feel like there was homework involved or that something was required of them or that they're behind. It's just, here's some information for you to enjoy. Here's a ritual for you to try and just consume the information and enjoy learning about different aspects of things. And, you know, realizing that people learn in different ways. So there's PDFs for people to read, there's audios for people to listen to. And then sometimes I'll do a presentation. So there's also some visuals. So there's a lot of different ways that you can learn.
So that is something that's available online on your website.
Yes.
And it's a monthly subscription and you can basically go at your own pace to learn and discover more.
Yes. And at this point I began in 2021. So at this mm-hmm. point, you've got all of last year's material to go through and just pick the parts that are interesting to you. If you want to learn about gods and goddesses, or if you wanted to learn more about ancient texts, so I have two tiers. That one is, I don't want to know about all the things. I just want to, you know, do something with this. And, for me, that got to be a lot. And I think also for the people that did sign up for all the information, it was too much information all at once. So this year I've scaled it back and, we just do either a god or a goddess for the month. Or we do a ritual practice for the month, or we do an ancient text for the month. And so that has really helped everyone to focus a little bit more and feel like they're on one path and not doing three different things.
And probably making more of a connection, I would imagine, with.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then how does that differ from your Priestess of Isis program and all of that? Is that more like one-on-one and in depth?
Yes, there's more one-on-one and there is homework involved. The Priestess of Isis program is a relationship with the goddess Isis that you are cultivating and developing. And so I ask you to send me journals of your, you know, experiences, your meditations. I have a one-on-one check-in with everyone each month. We do group gatherings each month. And I have an online community where I share Monday motivations and Thursday thoughts every week. And it's a platform where people can share their altars or their experiences. And not everyone uses the community, but everyone enjoys what I present in the community. So that's with, it's not a Facebook group, but it's, you know, it probably sometimes feels like, oh my gosh, there's something else, but I try to create it as something where the something else is more information and it's more fun and supportive.
Do you feel like there's a lot about ancient Egypt we still don't know?
Oh my goodness.
I feel like there's a lot of secretive secrets about the history of everything, really.
Yeah, and even the timeline.
Yeah.
Like, the dates. That's something also that very much gets to be debated as far as what is the actual timeline? How old is the Sphinx exactly? And these types of things. And someone that I really admired, and he just had passed away this year, Ramadan Hussein, he discovered in Saqqara, one of the biggest archaeological discoveries in Egypt. And that was the mummification workshop. And through his research there on some of the coffins that they found, there was also a mention of a serpent goddess and a priesthood to the serpent goddess that was previously no one really knew about.
Yeah.
So there, you know, Egypt is uncovering things all the time. And so there's always definitely something to learn.
Do you have any remembering or intuitive knowing about you having a past life there or a connection there? I mean, obviously there was, I feel like, or you wouldn't have had that come through, but do you remember that at all? Or are you starting through this process of uncovering and learning more? Are you having those little flashes of like, oh yeah, I knew that, or I remember?
I really wish I could say yes to that. I know that there are, and I feel like I know a time period. I don't fully understand my connection with her just yet.
Okay.
But it is something that happened to me back in 2008. When I was finishing up my ordination process or preparing for my ordination as a priestess of Isis, and we were supposed to be getting a new name for ordination from Isis. And there was a particular ritual to do. And there was a 5-day preparation period. So before you did the ritual, there was 5 days of you do this day one, you do this day two, and then, you know, so on. And then on the 6th day, you do the actual ritual. So I was on about day 3, and the requirement for that day was just chanting.
Okay.
So I was trying to think, okay, so I set out my temple space and, you know, opened all the directions and I lit my candle and all of those things. And I sat down to meditate and chant. And I was like, well, what am I going to chant today? And I thought, well, I'll just keep it ultra simple and I'll just chant Om. Mm-hmm. So I start chanting Om. Well, the similar situation started to happen when Hathor came and my heart was pounding and everything was opening up. All of a sudden, I felt this presence. And instead of chanting Om, it stretched out into Om Seti, Om Seti, Om Seti. And I didn't have a clue as to what that was, but it was big. And so I held that, I channeled that, I kept chanting that. Once again, like Hathor, there was nothing else, you know, but mm-hmm. just this, I'm here, there's a presence and you need to know me. And I was like, okay, so I don't even know. And, you know, the computer age was fairly early at that point. And so I go and I Google, you know, I do a search and I'm like, I don't even know how to spell this. And I came across a woman who was known as Om Seti. Mm-hmm. And she believed in a past life through her own experiences, was a secret lover to Seti the First. And her name in that lifetime was Bentrishi. Well, when I read that, Bentrishi, I had been kind of looking and researching names, and you know, I was planning on letting Isis name me in my meditation once I got to the ritual. But Bentrishi was one that I was kind of like, oh, I like that. I wonder if, you know, she'll give me that. And I liked it because it meant harp of joy. Mm-hmm. And I play the harp. So mm-hmm. I thought, oh, okay, I like the name. So to be chanting a woman's name that I had never heard of before in my life, to find out that she had these past life experiences as Bentrishi, the name that I was drawn to, that again, that's one of those magical experiences that you don't have any earthly explanation for. And so I know that in a past life, I'm connected to the time period of Seti the First. And Abydos, Seti the First mortuary temple, Om Seti's gravesite there, everything, like I'm very drawn to that. I love going there. I love spending time there. But that's, I don't have any recollections of, oh, maybe I was also Bentrishi, because you know, how many people are Cleopatra in a past life? So,
right.
You know, it all has to do with souls and the particulation of souls and that type of thing. So I don't understand my connection with her, but I appreciate it and I honor it. And I just keep going back to Abydos, looking for answers and talking with Seti and Om Seti and learning about ancient history, the history of Egypt, you know, so maybe I can find it someday.
I love that. I mean, it seems to me like it's just meant to be, like that you didn't need it. It came through you. You didn't need it to come through.
Yeah.
So in your program, do you, in the Priestess of Isis, do you go through rituals like that to the people who participate actually get a name as well?
Yes. And it's been so wonderful, like watching the whole process, because I know what's coming. And as they're working through the program, you know, they don't necessarily know that that's the case. I think they all do now because we're in the online community and that's kind of what's happening when people are ordained. They change their name to their priestess name. And to watch the process of kind of unfold for them, of having the goddess come to them and hearing a name, you know, and always if it comes to them early, I'm like, well, that's really interesting. Just kind of hold on to that experience. And then as you get closer to the end where you're given a name, you know, we'll see what happens when that takes place. But the names that people have gotten for them have been very personal and meaningful, and they're all very comedic, you know, just like the pharaoh's names, you know, Ma'atmin, something or other. And so they're very meaningful.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Mm-hmm. Is there any, like, without giving any of your programs away, are there any like little details or history of Egypt that you could share with the listeners? that comes to mind?
Just some little piece of historical information to share.
Yeah, like maybe yeah, that's not like something I could Google, or I don't know.
Ah, well, let's see. That's a fun question.
And if not, that's okay. I don't mean to.
Oh, no, no. I have so many things that I've learned about recently and read, and I'm like, well, which one should I share? Okay, let's talk about magical practices. Because mm-hmm. This is something I think that people can relate to. A fun thing for me is that I got a book, and it's called The Greek Magical Papyri. And it's translations of these various papyri from Greek, from Greece, mm-hmm. and it's magic spells. And so I started reading through that. You know, there's spells for love, and there are spells for like invisibility. So if you've ever watched any of the Harry Potter movies, mm-hmm. in reading through the Greek magical papyri, I can tell that J.K. Rowling did her research into ancient magic. little things like when Hermione says, you know, they're pronouncing something wrong and that's why the spell isn't working. That's part of the ancient Egyptian magic, is you had to know not only the words, but like the intonation of it and how you pronounce it. And if you pronounced it incorrectly, the magic wouldn't work, and these types of things. And I came across some love spells. And this is one of those times where in your reading, you begin to connect the dots. Mm-hmm. So in the love spells, it was talking about how, you know, please don't let the person that I'm interested in think of anyone but me. Don't let them be able to get dressed because they can only think of me. And there were these things, and I had to say these prayers to the goddess Hathor, 7 days in a row, and I have to go and like gaze upon the person that I loved, and all of these sorts of things. And then I was reading ancient Egyptian poetry. And in the poetry, that's something that is being said. So it's back and forth. This guy is talking about this girl, and then it has the girl, she's talking about this guy. And the girl is basically like, oh, I can't even put my makeup on because I'm thinking about my love, and I can't even talk to my friends because all I can think about is being with this person that I love. And I'm like, they did a love spell. That's what this love poem is talking about, is their ancient practice of magic, and it's showing up in their love poetry. And so for me, that was super exciting. And so of course I had, you know, I'd already chosen, this was back in early days of Patreon, I think February of last year. So be sure you sign up and get the VIP level. But it's a presentation I wanted to do the love poetry. And then I type it all out. And then also as I do an audio reading of it, as I'm reading it, that's when I'm having these realizations. And so that's all included in the presentation. But
I love
that. Is that the kind of nugget you were looking for?
Yes, yes. Because in some of my research lately and my readings and some of the things I'm into, it is stated, and I don't know if it through your knowing and research, and I want to kind of take it back to, you know, your religious upbringing. It is said that Jesus practiced, or Yeshua practiced, many years in Egypt to learn the ancient teachings and ancient ways. Have you discovered that on your end as well? Like, I mean, they were there for long periods of time.
Yes. And it's fascinating that when Mary was, you know, after they had Jesus, basically it was the angel came and said, it's not safe here. You need to go to Egypt. Mm-hmm. Like, Egypt was the safe place to go. Mm-hmm. And Egypt was within the destiny of Yeshua or Jesus, mm-hmm. to learn all of these practices of healing and wisdom and understanding. And so, you know, we see that he's a little child, and then the angel comes and says, okay, you can come back. And then Jesus is gone until he's a teenager. And then when he's in the teenage year, what happens to him? He's in the temples and he's teaching and he has all of the men gathered around him and they're astounded at what he knows. And it's because I believe those 13 years were spent in Egypt, in the temples. He was learning. And so I think there's a huge, and there's so much in the Bible and in the stories of Jesus. If Jesus is the exalted one, he's the Osiris of ancient Egypt. Mm-hmm. You know, when he comes in on Palm Sunday and he's riding on the donkey, you know, the donkey is a symbol of the god Set, which is the god in ancient Egypt that kills Osiris and sends him on his destiny, his fate, his journey of being a god of the underworld. And so Jesus coming in riding on the donkey was very symbolic, mm-hmm. that he overcame the things that, you know, took him out, basically.
Yes.
He's going to overcome. So that even that itself is tied into ancient Egypt.
Some of the readings said that he practiced there with like Mary Magdalene and other followers because of the vibration of the pyramids. Basically, they performed rituals in there, and that is what helped him prepare mm-hmm. for you know, coming back. His body was never really actually, they were able to go into a deep, like trance-like meditation. And
yes. And I will tell you the energy inside of the pyramid. So if you have the opportunity to travel with Egypt, and I hope that your listeners know, I do trips to Egypt, so you can have this opportunity. But to be inside the Great Pyramid, the energy there, the first two times I went inside of it, I was so nauseated. I felt like I was going to be sick. And it's not because I'm claustrophobic or things like that. I was just like, I don't know what is going on in here. I didn't understand. So that was the first time. So the second time I'm like, okay, I'm going to sort this out. I'm going to feel it. So I get up in there and I'm once again, I'm, you know, just feeling the energy and feeling overwhelmed and nauseated and like I'm gonna be sick. And I stood there and I basically told my guides, I'm like, all right, there's nowhere for me to throw up in here, you know, there's nowhere for me to have to run to the bathroom in here, like you're gonna have to help me understand this and deal with this. So I stood there inside the king's chamber and I started to just get into my body. Like, what is happening to my body, my physical body? And I had this sensation, if you've ever watched the old Star Trek movies, or, you know, where they're beaming in and out of places, and mm-hmm. or if you watch the newer movie, Lucy, where, you know, she just becomes like all of these particles and she's flying around. Lucy's a really great example because she's flying around, she becomes particulated and she then becomes one, basically, with everything, with the entire wisdom of the universe. Like she connects in that way. And that is how I felt inside the Great Pyramid, is this particulating of the body, becoming one with everything globally. So when you talk about, you know, Yeshua going to Egypt, doing work inside the temples, reaching these states of wisdom through meditation, I would say that's a possibility.
Yeah. Since I would love to go to Egypt at some point, that's definitely on the bucket list, but I read somewhere the other day that you cannot meditate or like practice yoga or kundalini there. Is that true?
We always have to remember. So if we have a private visit, like we oftentimes will go to Philae and have a private visit. We have in the past done a private visit inside the Great Pyramid. When you pay for your private visit and in between the paws of the Sphinx, you can have your ceremony, you can have your ritual, you can meditate. There's actually no law that you can not meditate in the temples. However, remembering and being mindful of other people who are there, that's the biggest point for me, is that I always encourage people, if you want to meditate in the temple, don't do it. I mean, you've waited so long to get here. Don't sit here and meditate with your eyes closed. Sit somewhere in the temple. Find a piece of art on the walls that you're drawn to and just sit there and stare at it. You know, if you need to close your eyes, then at some point you can, but you're not going to be there in the temple in lotus position oming,
right?
Because that's disruptful for everyone else who's there. But on a private visit, we can do things like that. As far as doing yoga and things like that, I find it interesting. I think you, you know, or dancers are a big thing.
Really?
It depends. I feel like it depends on the guard that day.
Okay.
What they'll allow you to do, because we've had private visits inside the Great Pyramid where it's no problem and we can chant and we can lie down in the sarcophagus and meditate, and others, guards that have been like, nope, you can't get in there, you can't do that, you can't do this. And it's like, we've paid to be in here, like, why are you not letting us do the things that we're doing? Because we're not hurting, we're not disturbing anyone else, you know. Right. We're not disturbing anyone else. So but yeah, to be in front of Hatshepsut temple and doing yoga, I don't feel like that's respectful.
Right.
So no, but you can have your yoga retreat, you know, and, yes, you know, still be there, right, in Egypt and doing it, like at your hotel or on the balcony, or, you know, set up a place to where you can do that, and connect, for sure.
And then there's like other, you know, stories about Egypt and how, because of how the pyramids were made, the ancient beings like came down and helped because of the tech and stuff like that. Has any of that ever come through in your connection with Hathor or Isis?
So, okay.
Or does there's it even matter? You know, does it really even matter? Probably not.
All right. So in the last couple of years, I've really gotten away from only studying the mysteries of ancient Egypt and also studying and learning about the history, because then that makes it even more rich for me. Just like reading the Greek magical papyri, right, and the love poems and noticing something about that. So there's something historical about that, not just magic. And so when we talk about, you know, celestial beings or, you know, aliens coming and building the pyramids, that does a couple of things. One of the things that I feel that it does is it takes away from the abilities that the ancient Egyptians had, as an incredibly smart and ingenuitive culture of people. We remove that from them. If we look at intelligent life outside of our scope of vision, and we look at things that happen in our own history, let's say, you know, the thing that comes to my mind is the stealth fighters and all of the things that are happening within the military, with aircraft. Like one day we're, you know, with the biplanes and the Wright brothers, and the next thing we know, oh my gosh, we can't even see the airplane. It's not detectable on radar, these types of things. So I do kind of think that there's something to intelligent life communicating with humans in some way, or even that the intelligent life is here as humans in these positions of architecture, engineering, and that they're utilizing, you know, their wisdom and bringing it to us here. So that is possibly a possibility. Also the fact that they actually found, and it's fascinating, papyri that describe the building of the Great Pyramid and the track that they had to go. It was like 2 weeks to get to the quarries in the south. And then they would spend time there quarrying these large stones. And then the journey that they would travel and to come back bringing the stones was another, you know, series of 2 to 4 weeks. And there was just this back and forth and back and forth. So, you know, it was is an interesting, you know, piece of ancient writing that actually describes how the pyramids were built.
So amazing. You have so much knowledge and just so much wisdom to share about Egypt and the goddesses and Isis and Hathor, and so much available on your website as well. You offer courses, YouTube, readings. And I know we're getting close on time. So is there anything else you would love to share with the listeners today about what you offer? Because I'm excited to explore and dig deep.
Well, all I will say about what I offer is if you're drawn to my work, you go to thegoddessinside.com. That's where you can find out all the information. You can follow me on social media, on Instagram, I'm the Goddess Inside. And then also if you want to travel to Egypt, there's twoladiestravelco.com, and you can find out about our tours. If you are a tour leader and let's say you want to lead a yoga retreat there, you can contact me. We can put together something for you to lead in Egypt. If I'm a tour company. So if you want to go to Egypt, but not necessarily on one of the tours that I have, there are lots of options for you to reach Egypt. The biggest thing, I guess, you know, that I want to share with people and your listeners is, you know, in your own journey of awakening, tune in to yourself, trust what you receive, yet have an element of discernment. Mm-hmm. So many times in people's awakenings, I have seen people where they are incapacitated then because they're receiving what they would call, I'm getting a download and I can't go to dinner. You know, first and foremost, we are here as human beings to have a human experience. And if you have a dinner date with a family or you have things to go to with friends, your guides, angels, the extraterrestrial beings, whoever it is you're working with, they need to respect that. So I think discernment and boundaries early on in your spiritual practice is key to preserving your sanity and helping you to live your best human life possible. So I don't feel like we're here to know all of the answers, but I feel that we're here to be a part of making our world a better place. And if we're always incapacitated and we can't, even things like I'm such an empath and I can't go to the grocery store, you know, it's like you need some definite boundaries. Yeah. You know, I don't go to the grocery store and feel like I need to pass messages on to the cashier. Just create whatever it is that you need to create for yourself, a pyramid of light visually, put your guides and angels around you. Imagine yourself in a bubble, a Merkaba, something that keeps to where you can notice that there's things going on around you and you can use that in a positive way. So let's say you're an empath and you're at the grocery store and you're in line at the checkout and all of a sudden you feel very sad. If you've done your homework and you understand that this feeling of sadness is not yours, it's coming from the cashier or the lady behind you, as a human then in this experience, begin to notice the cashier, the lady behind you. Say something positive to them. I really like your hair today, or oh my gosh, your nails are amazing, or you know, you look like you've had a hard day, you know, hopefully you get off work soon, you know, something that's positive to where they feel seen. And that's all you need to do. You don't need to say, oh my gosh, I got this psychic feeling and I saw that you're sad. Isis as a goddess, you know, she dressed like the people. She would go into the villages like a beautiful young woman, like an old wise woman. And she would teach them how to garden, how to breastfeed, how to care for the animals. And she didn't need to come into the village and say, I am Isis, come and listen to what I have to teach, you know? And I think that's one of the biggest things, I guess, I want to share with your listeners is discernment, boundaries, and enjoy the human experience and do what you can to help others through your gifts.
Yes. And you sharing that shows that Isis didn't think of herself as greater than, or, you know, she saw everyone equally as love and treated others just in that way, right?
Yeah, because it's interesting. Her name, the hieroglyph for her name is the picture of a throne. And so that's her name. It means the throne. And for a goddess whose name means the throne and who's on the throne to just be, mm-hmm. you know, she experienced everything as we did. She had great loss in her life. She had immense family dysfunction in her life and betrayal. So she understands the human experience. And so she can be like a leader of the people and for the people, because she has that humility. She has that humility.
And then a side question, in your programs, whether it be the Priestess of Isis or the Patreon program, with the Mystery School, are there energy practices that you've picked up from Egypt through that are incorporated in either of those? Or
I feel like that they're there. How would you say it? Not like as in your face, this is from Egypt. But the chanting, the words, affirmations, these types of things, I think that they're important, important practices. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. Is there anything else you would like to share with the listeners about Egypt, or with what's going on in the world right now, just like a positive affirmation or something?
Yeah.
That comes through.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that I always like to encourage people when they think about the things that are going on in the world is, you know, whether it's political unrest or, you know, atrocities happening. If you're going to do something about it, then do something about it. A lot of times, especially with social media, you know, we can come across memes or we can come across these little sayings, and we think somehow in our minds, we feel like posting those things, you know, does something to change the world. But what can you do in your world, in your part of the universe, to help? If you wanted, you know, to give money or send goods, like supplies or things that people need, to areas of the world that need it, then do those things, you know. We can't feel personally responsible. That's the thing about empaths. A lot of times we feel personally responsible for things going on in the world. And if there's something that you can do, that you see that you can do, then do it. And if there's something that you want, you like, I wish I could do more. Well, okay. So there's suffering in the world. Who's suffering in your community?
Right.
Where can you reach out to the women's shelter? Where can you reach out to the homeless shelter? Where can you reach out to, like, I know some people, they're like, I'm not going to, they make a point to comment on any post I make about Egypt that they're boycotting travel to Egypt because they're so cruel to the cats there and that they poison them. And I'm like, okay, well, we live in America where this sort of thing happens also all the time. You know, it's just the same as it is there. There's atrocities to animals happening here in America all the time. So you're going to not live in America? Right. What can you do about
that? Where are you going to go?
Yeah. Where are you going to go? So what can you do about that? You can buy bags of cat food for the shelter. You know, you can go and volunteer and help clean out their cages. You can go and help them when they're doing, you know, adoption things at festivals or events. You know, do something. That's a big thing, is just to do something.
Yeah,
something that you can do.
I love that. On your website, you have so many events coming up, so many like workshops I see for this year. Is there any, do you have a favorite, or are they all equally?
A lot of the things that I have right now are On demand. So one of my favorite on demands would be my Hathor the Golden One online course, where you go into that. And then I think I also have my Summer of Hathor available on demand. I'll have to look and see, but yeah, all the Hathor classes, I really enjoy when people get involved with those and begin to open up, because the Hathor course is hosted on an online community. And so there's places there where you can share, you can gobble up all the information and, yes. So I guess that one.
I love it. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for being on the podcast today. I definitely hope to connect with you again, because you have a wealth of knowledge and information to share, and you're creating and bringing people together, which is helping to raise the vibration of the planet and the world. So you're doing lovely things.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me on. It's been wonderful to share everything with your listeners and to meet you and to see all the things that you're offering as well. Helping people to awaken.
Yes. And it's amazing. I feel like we're coming together, like, you know, us meeting and how everything played out. Definitely meant to be. So
yes.
Yes.
Yes, for sure.
Well, have a beautiful day. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right.